Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Tube Talk.
On a clear day, rise and look around you, and you'll see who, just who you are. On a clear day, how it will astound you that the glow of your being outshines every star you feel part of, every mountain, sea, and shore. You can hear from far and near a world you've never heard before. And on a clear day, on that clear day, you can see forever.
Frank Sinatra, on a clear day, you can see forever. What happened to Happy Days Are Here Again? Is this Tube Talk on WRCA Radio, 1330 AM? It certainly is. And, you know, we're in hiatus mode here with our opening song. We may need to select a new song as we cruise into a new year celebrating our electronic entertainment and musical heritage here each and every Friday night. I'm your host, Paul Burish. This is WRCA Radio, 1330 AM. Thanks for listening. We appreciate your listenership. We have a website up for the program just to kind of give you a little hi, hello, how are you, why do we do it type of a feel. TubeTalkClassicRadioShow.org. And the email for the show, if you'd like to drop us your comments, questions, reactions, the email for the show, as always, tubetalk1@gmail.com. This is a Bluebird recording, and I have to say, it's one of my most favoritest versions of this classic song right here on Tube Talk.
There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather, since my man and I ain't rain together. Keeps raining all the time. Life is bad, gloom and misery everywhere. Stormy weather, just can't get my poor self together. I'm weary all the time, the time. So weary all the time. When he went away, the blues walked in and met me. If he stays away, old rocking chair will get me. All I do is pray the Lord above will let me walk in the sun once more. Can't go on. All I have in life is gone. Stormy weather. Since my man and I ain't together, keeps raining all the time, keeps raining all the time. I walk around heavy hearted and sad. Around and I'm still feeling bad. Rain pouring down, blinding every hope I had. This pittering, pattering, beating and spattering drives me mad. Love, 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 love. This misery is just too much for me. Can't go on. Everything I had is gone. Stormy weather. Since my man and I ain't together, keeps raining all the time. Keeps raining all the time.
With a striking voice and a striking appearance, that's Ms. Lena Horne. And that's just a super deluxe version of that timeless classic. I have that cut on a couple of different discs, but the Bluebird, I don't know if that's her first one she did for them or not, but I gotta say, I love it. This is Tube Talk. You have reached the zenith of the independently produced fine broadcast experience. We cater to the erudite music lover, the antique radio and vintage electronics enthusiast, and to the person who still enjoys a civil, sweet, happy, and gentle program on the AM band. This is broadcast band radio at its finest. I sincerely hope you can listen on a well-restored vintage antique radio, a glowing dial, the gentle glow of the tubes emanating from the rear of the set, that scent that one can only get from a well-warmed vintage tube chassis cooking up in the back. You know, when the weather gets cold, there ain't nothing like that, folks. Well, our guest is chilling out in the green room here. Let's have a little dinosaur.
I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through. That small cafe, the park across the way, the children's carousel, the chestnut tree, the the wishing well. I'll be seeing you in every lovely summer's day, in everything that's light and gay. I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon. But I'll be seeing you. Summer's day, in everything that's light and gay, I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon. But I'll be seeing you.
That's Dinah Shore. I'm Paul Burish. This is Tube Talk. Thanks for joining us as we glide into a new year, bringing you the best in vintage radio entertainment right here on WRCA 1330 AM, streaming on the WRCA 1330 AM website, also available via TuneIn and iHeartRadio. Well, I think we can sneak one more in before we join our guest for this evening, who's anxiously awaiting to share his story with you here on Tube Talk.
Just me, let's find a cozy spot to cuddle and woo. Just us, just we, I've missed an awful lot, my trouble is you. Oh gee, what are your charms for? What are my arms for? Use your imagination, just see you. Just me, our tired lover's not round wonderful you.
use your imagination. Just you, just me. I'll tie a lover's knot, tie a lover's knot, tie a lover's knot around one of you.
Well, our guest this evening is Alan Finger. Alan is a member of the New England Antique Radio Club, proprietor of Golden Age Radio Repair, an all-around swell radio guy. Alan, welcome to the show.
That's quite the intro. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, we'll see if you can live up to that here, because, you know, we set our expectations high on this show. Anyway, Alan is a fellow member of the radio club I belong to, and he also maintains a radio repair business, Golden Age Radio Repair, and so we'll look to him for some advice here today. We're going to talk a little bit about what would make a good starter kit, I guess, for lack of a better term, with a brand new technician, somebody aspiring to be a radio repair guy in our hobby. And Alan, maybe you could just tell the audience a little bit, how did you get into the world of antique radio?
Okay. Well, actually, I got into it when I married my wife, and she was an avid collector of different kinds of antiques. So she dragged me along to the antique stores, and I'd be sitting there looking around with glazed eyes and all that. And one day she said, you know, you like electronics. Why don't you see if you can find some old radios and, you know, fix them up? And she has regretted that ever since.
Well, you know, and the rest is history. How many do you have in your present collection?
I'm not a collector per se, but I have projects, and I would say I have probably about 75 or 80 radios awaiting resurrection.
Wow. So what's the timeline like if somebody were to contract you to repair a set? What's your turnaround like?
Actually, because of the holiday, I wound up with a backlog. So typically it takes, depending upon whether there's cabinet restoration involved or not, typically I tell people 3 to 6 weeks.
So you do a full soup to nuts approach, then you also do cabinet work in addition to the electronics, huh?
That's correct, you know, both wood and plastic cabinetry.
Well, see, just an all-around radio renaissance man, so good for you. And I've seen some pictures on your Facebook page and also on the web page, and you've got some really nice stuff, and it looks like you do a fine job on it. So I was listening the other day. I was thinking about you because I was listening to Stuart Warner that I believe you had for sale at one of the swap meets. Yours was the Firestone branded model. Same chassis, same everything, and it was probably Stuart Warner manufactured for Firestone, but it was a nice set, and you had it sounding very nice and looking very nice as well. So you can get some good work done. And what's the best way for somebody to get a hold of you, Alan, if they wanted to have you take a look at a set?
Two ways. They can just email me at info@goldenageradios.com, or they can give me a call at 978-561-9950.
Yeah, 'cause it's a very common question that I'm asked, where can I get something repaired? You know, everybody wants to know because the repair force is shrinking. So that's what turns us to our next topic. This is why many people feel if they're going to get that radio going, they may have to do it themselves. So what would you recommend for somebody just starting out, maybe looking to recap, you know, their first All-American 5? What would the bare minimums be that they need? And obviously we're going to preface this by saying one of the bare minimums they need is to be extremely aware that they're working on an electrical product with high voltages that can be lethal and very dangerous in the event somebody does not handle them properly and know what they're doing. So this is not something to just go out and decide you want to do. Hopefully you've been exposed to electronics in some manner, way, shape, or form. Maybe you've done some reading and done some work on theory, and you have an idea where you need to go with this, and you have a respect for just how dangerous it can be. But what would you need, Alan, in the way of a little basic toolkit to get going?
Okay, we'll certainly touch on the safety aspects a little bit, but in terms of basic equipment, some basic hand tools, a couple of different sizes of needle nose pliers, a pair of diagonal wire cutters, not big ones, small ones, because the wires and radios are generally not very big. Very handy is a wire stripper, the kind that has little two notches, and you can just sort of put the wire in and pull. Some standard screwdrivers, mostly flathead. Occasionally you wind up, you'll encounter a Phillips, but most of the time all the screws are flathead. Some smaller miniature screwdrivers to get at those little set screws and the knobs and such. Likewise, some manufacturers use the hex screws, so you should have a set of hex wrenches. A set of socket drivers are very handy, or a socket, small socket set going down to a quarter of an inch. And a set of alignment tools, and you can find those on eBay. Radio Shack, I believe, still sells them. They're plastic tools that you would use to make adjustments where metal tools would actually affect the tuning. Obviously, you're going to need a soldering iron. You can buy an inexpensive one, you know, for that's 25-watt iron. That'll be adequate for most uses. If you're going to be a little bit more serious about this, then, excuse me, my cell phone went off in the middle.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay. If you're going to do this more often, you might want to invest in a an iron with electronic temperature control, because it reacts better to different size connections. On some radios, some of the connections are on the chassis or very close, or a big piece of metal that tends to suck heat away from an ordinary iron, and those adapt well.
Now, you know, for anybody who's listening to us who's in the greater Boston area, if I don't know if you're familiar with this outfit, if you've ever been down 128, there's a great store, You Do It Electronics. And You Do It is really kind of one of these throwback stores. They have all these parts. They have solder. They have soldering irons. You could probably find your alignment tools there, set of mini screwdrivers. It's a great store, but, of course, you know, you have to live somewhere in the greater Boston area. But there are resources online. I'm sure you could pick things up like that at Mauser or any one of the electronic supply houses as well, do you think?
Right. Mauser, Jameco, DigiKey. Also that type of thing. There's also Antique Electronic Supply Company.
Yep, AES. Yep.
AES, which is tubesandmore.com.
Just to move forward with this a little bit, what would you suggest in the way of maybe a can of compressed air if somebody didn't have an air compressor? What would you recommend somebody have for?
So the basic chemicals that I keep around are contact cleaner and lube, and that's pretty important because the contacts are, you know, pretty dirty on most of the old radios, or they're oxidized, and that will clean that off. A bottle of rubber renewer, if you've got any rubber parts or even a line cord, that can unsoften up the rubber and bring it back to new. And canned air. And I buy them over at Costco, 6 cans for like $17. And that's really good for blowing the dust out of parts. So that's very good. I also, if you're going to do this, you can buy resistor and capacitor assortments from a variety of suppliers. One of our club members, wjoe.com.
That's right, Joe Coco.
Joe Coco sells all this stuff. And you should have some half-watt resistors, some 5-watt resistors in your assortment, and both polyester, which are the yellow capacitors that are standard 450-volt non-polarized, and electrolytic capacitor assortments to go in your radios. If you're doing a set with a transformer, you need 450-volt electrolytics. And if you're doing an AC-DC set, then the 160s are fine.
Now, what would you suggest if somebody was looking to have some electronic gadgetry as well? A voltmeter or a voltometer? Would you say that's a standard requirement?
I would say, yeah. The basics are, you know, that I use, that 90% of the tool of the time I use test equipment, it's going to be a multimeter, and I would suggest getting one of the digital ones. They're not necessarily expensive, but the inexpensive analog meters put too much drain on a circuit and will give you inaccurate readings. I don't even know if they sell that much of those anymore.
Yeah, those are the You see those at the swap meets in the, in the lake. Yeah,
pick up a used RF signal generator on eBay or something that will let you align a set and test it. You can put a signal on at various points to find out, you know, where it stops if you've got a problem. And also a tube tester, so you can figure out what you're doing, whether, you know, what tubes are working or not. There's different kinds, but the least expensive are the emission testers. They're perfectly adequate, and you can buy a good used one like an ICO 625 for about $100 on eBay.
So it doesn't seem like a big capital investment to get in on the ground floor, so to speak.
And I would say you get in for $200 to $250 if you're frugal.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing, too, is if you happen to go to a radio club swap meet, like one of our New England Antique Radio Club meets, or to a radio show like the upcoming Radio 45 at the Westford Regency Hotel coming up in February. You get to meet a lot of people who are already in this, and they may have, you know, in addition to collecting too many radios, a lot of guys collect too much other stuff. And, you know, if you say, hey, well, I'm looking at trying to do a little of my own work, not only can you get some advice and maybe some help, but you might be able to pick up some equipment that you need to get things done, too, because do you really need to have 4 tube testers? You know, do you really need to have, you know, alignment tools like a pencil can? You know, so you might be able to scrounge a few things, too, especially if you tell somebody, look, I'm trying to do this all on a budget here. So the swap meet is a great place to go and network, but also to maybe pick up some parts. And occasionally you'll see some test equipment, you know, available somebody might have on their table there. So given that you've rounded up what you need to get done, what would be your suggestion? Let's say I have a nice little basic RCA 5-tube All-American here, sitting here, probably from the 50s, plastic case, and it plays, but it's a little scratchy, and there's a little bit of a hum, and, you know, it just, we know the electrolytic capacitor is, you know, that's something that's going to have to be dealt with, but what's your opinion on attacking things? I know there are many folks who say, you know what, take out the electrolytics, swap out all the capacitors, because, you know, they'll give you trouble at some point in time, and you're already in there, you're underneath the chassis. And then I know there are some folks whose philosophy is, well, look, let's fix what we need to fix, and they might check the capacitors to see if, you know, there's any leakage or issues, but they might tend to leave it in or leave some of them in. And the same for the resistors. If the, you know, they're within tolerance, to say, fine, you know. And I understand people leave the resistors alone more than they leave the capacitors alone. What's the Allen finger method? Would you recommend taking out all the caps?
I've got a very definite approach to it. First of all, I'll clean everything thoroughly, blow it out with air, make sure there's, I can see what I'm doing in there.
Sure.
Make sure there's no dust in the variable capacitor. Then I routinely either replace or bridge the electrolytic capacitors with new ones. Typically, they dry out; they don't short. So you can just, rather than, you know, trying to rewire everything, you can just put a new capacitor across the old one for an electrolytic, and that will give you the capacitance you need. I also routinely replace all the paper capacitors.
Now,
even think about it.
Just,
and then I'll try the radio to see if it works.
Now, just as a general point of interest here for somebody who may not be, you know, into the hobby as much as yourself, electrolytic capacitor is a capacitor that is filled with, it's an oil, isn't it, the medium that's in there?
No, it's actually filled with a liquid, an electrolyte that conducts electricity. And what they do is they have two aluminum plates on which one of them, they build up a very fine insulating film, an oxide. And, you know, and that gives you a very high capacity in a very small space. The problem with it is, of course, over time, the way those were built in those days, some of that liquid would evaporate, and therefore there wouldn't be anything to make the tight contact. So it loses capacity.
So, you know, so your philosophy would be to get the electrolytics out, take the others out, get the paper and wax out, because whether it's something you know you can deal with it now, or especially if you're going to listen to your radio, it's something that you'll probably have to deal with, you know, sometime down the road, and you're already under the hood, as the mechanic likes to say.
Exactly, and the paper capacitors, which are basically, they've got wax on either end. You can, they're pretty obvious what they are. Moisture gets into that wax, and they start to actually leak electricity. So they're inevitably going to cause you trouble, if not now, or very shortly. But you can't bridge those like you can the electrolytics. Those you would, you cut them off as close to the body of the part as possible, and then you've got the existing leads. You can sort of bend a little loop in them, and then put a new capacitor right across that, right between the two loops.
Solder carefully, make sure it's a good joint, and mm-hmm. move on. Now, some people I know actually suggest that, you know, you do this as a very one step by one step. You know, do each cap to make sure that you have it in. You know, the pull, you know, it's lined up right. And if you cut all of them out and then go back and say, okay, well, you know, wait a minute, that's a novice's mistake and something you would not want to do, right?
That's asking for trouble, because even if you don't have a schematic, you can do this, because you can read the part values on the parts themselves. So you take one out, you can read the value, pick one out of your bin that's close. It doesn't have to be exactly the same, because some of the old values aren't commonly available anymore. Like a 50, a 0.5 microfarad capacitor would be a 0.47 nowadays. And you would just slip it in, and if you do it one by one, you'll be able to keep track of what you're doing without actually having a schematic of the radio.
So, providing you've taken out the electrolytics and replaced it, and you've replaced your paper and wax caps, and you get back to the point where the radio is playing and it sounds pretty good, maybe you need to clean up the tuning condenser a little bit. What would you suggest? Blow a little air in there, and then a lubrication.
I blow a little air. I put some. The other thing I would do routinely is put contact cleaner on the spray some into the variable, into the volume control and any tone controls or any switches.
Sure.
And rotate them to get that in there. And I would put some contact cleaner where the shaft contacts the body of the variable capacitor.
Now,
the tuning condenser.
Now, the other thing we'd be concerned with, and maybe a little less so because our RCA here is from the 50s, and we're dealing with really plastic-covered wiring, so, you know, barring any damage to any of the internal wiring, if the insulation looks pretty good and it's held up over the years, is there any reason to think that needs to be redone?
I don't redo wires unless the insulation is visibly, and you do get it with plastic wires where the insulation is cracking. It hardens up and falls off, in which case you can either pull one end of the wire and put some heat shrink
tubing
insulator over it, or you can replace the wire. And I always keep a supply of 20-gauge hookup wire in different colors around for that.
So
to replace the wires. Line cords are important, too. They tend to get kind of hard and cracked.
Stiff, right.
You want to replace that.
Yep, and again, it's the type of thing, that's the interface, you're going to plug that into the AC, you want to make sure that's up to snuff and not going to cause any problems before the current even gets into the set.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's interesting, the more people I, you know, run into and will find out I'm interested in antique electronics, always want to say, hey, well, you know, where do you get those tubes? Because there's this common conception or misconception, should we say, that, you know, it's the tubes that wear out, and once you plug in a fresh set of tubes, you're ready to go. And as most people will tell you, you know, it's really an issue with wiring, it's an issue with capacitors, it's an issue with the controls, and the tubes are usually, you know, in many cases, the least of your trouble. What do you usually find when you get into your average set? Would you say most tubes still show you, you know, that still go, or do you... You know, I know rectifiers and audio outputs are most likely the clunkers.
Right, they tend to get weak, but they're often still usable. I mean, 90% of the time, if you go through the basics of replacing the capacitors and cleaning the set, when you bring it up, it's going to work. Tubes are a problem maybe 10% of the time, but it's that 10% that you need the tube tester for.
Yeah, and the other nice thing about having that tube tester is if you're somebody who sees a lot of sets or you pick up some stuff, you know, along the way, and, you know, say the case is hopelessly cracked and beat up, or, you know, a lot of guys will pull just, well, I'll take the tubes, and if they test okay, I only paid $5 for the thing at the junk table at the swap meet. If the tubes are okay, you know, I came out ahead of the game, you know, so they're nice to have if you're trying to build up a little stock of tubes that you might be finding from radios that are just too far gone to be worked on and restored.
Absolutely. I've gone to flea markets during the summer and either picked up a box of tubes or I picked up a $5 radio that's got a pair of 245 tubes in it, which are probably worth about $80 a piece.
Yeah, so
maybe $5.
So you come exactly. It's funny because there's a fellow, he's a listener, and he occasionally will drop me a letter, and he just sent me a letter. I've got to make contact with him. He said his neighbor moved away. In addition to leaving all this trash out on the front steps or on the curb that I think he found a little bit annoying, he said, well, I looked over at the pile, and there were a couple of boxes, I guesstimate about 200 radio tubes that were in factory boxes, so he lifted those right off the top of the pile and wants to know if I'd like to take a look. So needless to say, a tester makes a find like that just a much more meaningful experience if you can cull out the ones that aren't going to do it for you. So, and you know, you never know, you could find something that you need, and it's nice to have a little backstock too, so the tester would come in most handy for that. So, you know, one other thing that I just wanted to touch on here, and we talked a little bit about the swap meets and getting some advice. If it's something you need a professional, you know, somebody who really knows their way around a set like Alan, you know, it may just be something that he has to do. But if you're willing, if somebody's willing to spend a little time with you, especially an old timer who's done an awful lot of sets, who's willing to say, hey, you know what, why don't you bring it over and I'll walk you through it. I mean, that's invaluable, isn't it?
Well, that's certainly very helpful. I mean, it depends upon your experience and learning style. There are some good books available, like The Antique Restoration Guide by David Johnson. Brett's Old Radios has a bunch of, on eBay, has a nice series of DVDs if you're more visual that way. But you're right, if you join a local club like the NEARC, which you can join on NEARC.net,